This is all theater. This is all just political theater.
Political theater. Political theater.
Pure political
theater.
Theater.
Political theater.
The nefarious,
significant, and protracted
political theater for political theater's sake.
I yield back.
From Washington, this is Political Theater. Roll Call's review of the spectacle of politics on Capitol Hill and across the country. I'm Jason Dick.
The Gridiron Club is one of Washington's longest-standing journalism institutions. Founded in 1885, it is known for its annual dinner, a gathering of club members, fellow journalists, and Washington elites, presidents, cabinet members, governors, ambassadors, and so forth. This year, the dinner is still making news days later, continues to make the rounds on it, most of this stemming from former Vice President Mike Pence's headliner comments about the aftermath of the January 6th attack on the Capitol and his former boss, Donald Trump. For this edition of Political Theater, we're going to discuss the Gridiron, its history, its mission, its traditions, and everything else you might want to know, but we're afraid to ask. And joining us to talk about the club is George Condon, who's the White House correspondent for National Journal, the former Washington bureau chief for Copley News, and the Gridiron's historian. George, welcome to Political Theater, first time for you.
Great, thank you. You left the most important thing out of my bio.
Clevelander, proud Clevelander, right?
well, that too, but I used to submit stories that you edited.
Yes. Back at our National Journal days, George was a big part of that crew. It felt like a magical time. So magical that I can't shake some of the people. We keep on running in the same circles, like our friend Peter Cohn. And
well, that's because you still owe some of us money.
it's exactly right. That's a long time thing. You can never outrace your past, especially for bad gambling debts. But in all seriousness, though, George, welcome. I know you and I are frequent guests of Julie Mason on her show,
right?
So we've always done this, you know, back and forth, but never with each other. So I'm very happy to have you on the show.
Except she's never asked me to do a movie review. You get to do that.
That's true. Well, I mean, but you do get to talk about designated hitter, but before the universal DH rule and things like that with her, you know, and basically anytime she wants to make fun of Cleveland, right? So
we don't permit that.
So George, let's talk about the Gridiron. I think most people, when they hear about the Gridiron, I mean, there are other Gridiron clubs across the globe. But the one in Washington is among sort of the most, you know, kind of curious of institutions. People know about it sort of, but don't really know about it because it's a fairly, you know, it's a fairly exclusive place. And then every once a year, you see people in white ties and tails, and they're not in a Sherlock Holmes movie. And people wonder what's going on, and then you know it sort of goes by. So let's talk about, you know, a little bit about the history and then get into the traditions before we start talking about what happened for this year's edition of the Gridiron.
Yeah, well, it as you mentioned, it started in 1885. It actually started at a time when relations between the press and public officials were at a awfully low ebb. They were you know, trying to arrest reporters covering the Senate, threatening to put them in prison. It flowed from after Andrew Johnson's impeachment in 1868. One of Andrew Johnson's people wrote that reporters are a scaly set of fellows, utterly regardless of truth or moral principle.
Now, are you sure that wasn't the previous occupant of the White House that said that? That sounds very Trumpian to me.
I'm not sure he's ever said the word scaly.
Scaly, that's true. Scaly is that's a very descriptive way of referring to us. I guess enemy of the people just sort of cuts right to the chase, right?
Right. And then things got worse. You had the railroad scandal, the Credit Mobilier scandal in 1872. And one of the points of starting Gridiron was to have dinners. And they were, you know, there was no TV or anything in those days, obviously. And it would just be small dinners, and you would bring together, you know, senators and members of the press. And at the same time, you had an explosion of the number of reporters in town. In 1868, you had 58 reporters covering the Senate. In 4 years, that doubled, or I mean, went up to almost 300, so from 58 to 300. And you had a lot of people who weren't really reporters. They were trying to get stock tips at the White House. So you had these organizations start forming to professionalize reporters. And so you had the standing committee in the House to see who could cover the House. That was in 1880. Then you had the standing committee in the Senate, 1884. Then Gridiron in 1885. Then the National Press Club in 1908. And then the White House Correspondents Association, 1914. And all of those served to professionalize who would be a reporter and who could cover things and how you would act as a reporter. And to improve relations, you had the Gridiron. So that's a long-winded way of putting it in some perspective.
No, and it seems like it in general. I mean, these organizations, you know, have also fulfilled those purposes. You know, like the and again, like, you know, full disclosure, I'm a member of the Press Club. I was formerly on the executive committee of correspondents for the Periodical Gallery. You know, I'm in the White House Correspondents Association, as are you. Yeah. I mean, but these organizations have professionalized the journalism over the course of the last century plus, and also they have improved relations between the administration, the Congress, and journalism. Sometimes to the point where we get a little criticism for being too close, whether it is appropriate to hobnob and, you know, get sloshed, you know, together on a Saturday night, but in general, though, it's certainly better than people, hating one another and even, you know, sort of inflicting violence on one another. I mean, you know, the late 19th century was a violent time as well around the Capitol. We don't have, you know, those sort of outbursts between press and members anymore. So in general, it's done, you know, sort of its job in making sure that people can at least talk to each other or break bread with one another. And if you're, you know, gluten-free, some other, you know, form of salad, break salad together.
And one of the things that's misunderstood about both Gridiron and the White House Correspondents' Dinner is just because you sit down with somebody for dinner and just because you laugh or make some jokes doesn't mean it's going to affect your coverage. It helps the coverage in the sense that you get to know people and they might return your phone call, but nobody is going to stop covering a good, juicy story because you had dinner. The one person who misunderstood that, even though he went to a lot of dinners, was Richard Nixon. He wrote a famous memo after a very lengthy memo after one of the correspondence dinners where it went on for, you know, a couple thousand words. He was so angry at how drunk he thought the reporters were and how they made fun, he thought, of him. And he had to give awards to people who had written, people like Woodward and Bernstein, who had written stories he didn't like. And he ordered his staff. Oh, well, and he and Agnew had performed a piano duet at the Gridiron Dinner. Setting aside the racial implications of what they played, he thought it would be a huge hit and there'd be good coverage after that. And he said, despite that, they still wrote negative stories. And he ordered his staff, never have me go to any of these dinners again in my presidency.
What was the song?
It ended in the two of them playing Dixie. To signify the Southern strategy. And in the room, this was, you know, Gridiron does not have a great racial history. We were very slow to add women members and very slow to add our first African-American member and columnist Carl Rowan. And in the audience that night, when Nixon did the piano duet, there was one black attendee, one black guest, and he was livid. At not just that they played Dixie, but that it was such a huge hit in the room.
So let's talk about some of the, you know, the traditions of what happens at the dinner, because I mean, one of the things that is, it seems to be a part of every story that's ever written about the Gridiron now is how the dress code is white tie and tails. It's one of these, you know, like things from another time, if you will. Our former colleague Ben Terrace, who's now at the Washington Post, wrote at length about this dinner, about how, you know, some Antony Blinken, who was was representing the administration in one of the headliner speeches, you know, how he had to rent, you know, a white tie. And there was this run on white tie and tails at tuxedo rental places all around Washington. But, you know, let's talk about some of these traditions about white tie and so forth. Has there ever been one, any consideration? Do people say like, oh, we should just have a regular tux or black tie?
If it's good enough for Fred Astaire, it should be good enough for us. No, of course, there have been discussions. When FDR was president, he absolutely hated white tie. It was uncomfortable for him in his wheelchair, and he lobbied very vociferously. But it's one of the few times FDR's lobbying did not pay off. I think they went to black tie during World War II, but they went right back to it. It's just it used to be we and the Washington Opera were the only two holdouts on white tie and tails, and now I think we're the only ones. It's what it's always been, and there's no real mood to change it. It wouldn't bother me if we changed it.
I say hold out. It's a great look for everybody. You know, your colleague now at National Journal, a longtime Gannett guy, Ledge King, he even went with the top hat.
You can really
go, you can just do the rental, of course, but I say go top hat, cane, you know, white gloves, maybe even, you know, go like everybody should go. Feel free, I think, to go over the top on this.
But that's how you dress on just a Tuesday at work, as I recall.
Yes. Yeah. I come in, you know, in my white tie. I'm inspired. and then the skits too. I mean, like there's a full sort of review of skits. I mean, some of them have changed, you know, over the years, but this is typically a, you know, an opportunity to, you know, like sort of lampoon politicians, fellow journalists, people in power, you know, with songs and skits and so forth.
Right. Well, one of the Gridiron rules is that the Gridiron singes but doesn't burn. So you try not to go too personal in the songs. You've had Harold Ickes in the Roosevelt administration felt that it was so nasty and so cruel that he said he wasn't coming back again. But for the most part, people take it pretty well. There was one song that Bill Clinton was angry about, but it turned out it wasn't the song. It was he didn't like who was singing it. Because he was somebody who had been on TV criticizing him on the Monica Lewinsky scandal. But you do one Republican skit, about seven songs, Democratic skit, about seven songs, and then there's an opener and a closer with one or two songs each. So it's not bad.
And also, just to note too, that your new inductees are required as part of the gig, part of the hazing ritual, if you will. They have to wear a ridiculous animal costume in some capacity that fits into the show.
Right. Although that's not quite as pronounced as before. We had the same costumer, a wonderful place in Baltimore, for 130 years. And unfortunately, the place did not survive the pandemic. We had survived the flu pandemic, but we didn't survive the COVID pandemic with the costume in place. So our costumes are not quite as elaborate as they were.
And just to give people a sense, there are about 60 to 70 members at any one point, active members, people who are in the press.
We're capped at 65.
And these are, sort of back in the day for a long time, it was bureau chiefs. It was primarily print. I recall it was maybe about 10, 15 years ago, you started letting in a few more broadcast journalists.
Actually our constitution had to be changed. And I, when Al Hunt was president, and I was in a group with Al to force through a constitutional amendment to change it. And we had quite a bit of opposition because they thought that TV had everything else. TV controls the first row of the briefing room at the White House. TV, dictates everything. And this would be the last thing we wouldn't let TV do. And some of us thought that was silly and didn't reflect reality. Because after all, the club was formed around the time of Marconi, and 30 years before TV, 30 years before the first news magazine. It was kind of silly to pretend that was still the reality. So we did change it. And as it turns out, that saved the club because the heart of the club had been regional newspapers, like my former home with the San Diego Union Tribune. Those don't exist anymore. Right. After 2008, 2009, the number of regional bureaus just got worse than decimated. It was almost wiped out. So if we had not allowed TV, radio, and columnists and so on in, we wouldn't have a club.
And also there was a little history made beyond, which we'll get to with some of the comments in this time, but you initiated your first photojournalist also this year.
Well, we know it's a gamble. We're not sure that pictures are going to stick around.
Right.
Now, admittedly, when the club was formed, we could have elected Matthew Brady as a member. But we didn't.
So, yeah, I mean, and, I guess, back then, I guess you could have gone with like woodcutters, also woodcut artists and so forth. But I think photojournalism might stick around for a little while longer. So,
that's our gamble anyway.
So let's talk about this evening. It'd been a while since my last time at the Gridiron. I think it was back in 2010. Bill Clinton was the headliner. He was sort of reveling in not having to run for anything. I think
that was 2009. Yeah. He spoke for Obama.
Yeah, and I think his line also was something along the lines of, miss me yet or something like that. Same format. It starts with what's called the speech in the dark, which is is this sort of eerie feeling where you literally turn the lights off and the president of the club gives introductory remarks and you're in the dark for about 10-15 minutes. With the exception, with the gridiron symbol, in the back, sort of lit up behind the president. And then you have the skits and the headliners, And, you know, the headliners this year, the Republican was Mike Pence, the former vice president. The Democrat was Phil Murphy, the current governor of New Jersey. And then representing the administration was Antony Blinken, the secretary of state. And, you know, it was all this is a roast, right? You know, people get roasted. They have fun with the comments and so forth. And, you know, again, most people are in on the joke. And then Pence made news by sort of departing from the jokey joke kind of part and kind of gave Fox News, without naming them specifically, the business about trying to reorient the way January 6th went down. Of course, the vice president was in danger that day, and then said, you know, the sort of the walk-off kind of line that everybody has quoted is that he does think that Donald Trump will be held accountable by history. And it's interesting, the reaction, you know, is one that, you know, it is news, you know, when the vice president says, or the former vice president says something like that. But then also, you know, it invites a lot of discussion about, you know, is this Pence trying to have it both ways and blah, blah, blah. But like, what was going through your mind, you know, when you heard that? Because it was it got serious for a few minutes there with those comments.
Well, the first thing, it reminded you that reporters have a good ear for news, because when he switched from the humor to the serious parts, I looked around the room and you had reporters who were just laughing and listening before, all of a sudden were taking notes and tapping away in their phones and so on, and people filed reports. So, you know, there wasn't a reporter in the room who didn't know that some news was being made. The second thing was, I didn't think it was accidental that he chose Gridiron to do this, because he knew that we are not televised. We do not permit television or radio to cover it. So there was no video of him saying that to drive Trump absolutely bonkers. So he can now say, I said what had to be said, I said it, but there's no video to be used against them in campaigns and so on.
Yeah, it was you're right, there was this weird shift in the mood, and you know, he went first too, you know, so you know, as far as the three headliners go, and then Murphy followed and then Blinken. But it was very there was a shift in the mood of the whole room. And again, you know, like this is a pretty I mean, there were about 600-700 people there, you know, all told, with about 100 people security details. Yeah, yeah. You know, because you know, we had, in addition to Blinken, William Burns, the CIA director, Alejandro Mayorkas, the Homeland Security secretary. You know, you had some ambassadors, some governors. Just the line of people of well armed security people. Representing different parts of the sort of security apparatus of the United States.
I think there were eight or so ambassadors, including the ambassador of Ukraine.
Right. So yeah, heavily guarded place, if you will. I feel like sometimes the seriousness is always there, you know, at these things, because they are high profile events. But this was. As the historian of the club, George, I mean, I'm sure this is more than just a footnote. This will probably be one of those episodes that you would highlight.
Absolutely. I mean, people are still talking about the 1907 dinner. I know you just mentioned it the other day, where there had been an incident in Brownsville, Texas, where a number of black troops were quartered, and there'd been a shooting in town, some whites hit, and one of the worst episodes of the Teddy Roosevelt presidency was he fully blamed the black troops and basically court-martialed them and so on, and they were blameless. They did not do anything wrong, and a Republican senator in Ohio, Senator Joseph Foraker, studied it, concluded that the black troops were innocent, and absolutely would not drop it and kept pushing it. And they almost came to blows at the Gridiron Dinner, where Foraker stood up and basically repeated his belief that the troops were being railroaded and were innocent, and President Roosevelt got up and just ripped into him and was steaming. It got to the point where they never served the main course in the dinner, because you can't serve while the president is talking, and they wouldn't stop. And it was pretty contentious. Then that was the one that people remember the most. And one other thing, even before Pence got serious, he went after Trump in some of his jokes. At one point said that he heard that the classified documents were in Trump's Bible. So he said that proved to me that he had never seen them.
Yeah, there was, I think, another line too, where he's, he was talking about leading a Bible study at the White House, and Trump, stopped by and said that he was really into the smiting and perishing of thine enemies. Yes.
There's some good stuff in there, he said.
There's some good stuff in there, Mike. Well, George, thank you for helping kind of demystify the club. I don't mean to demystify too much, because a lot of these things are the reason that they're fun is because they're kind of mysterious and they're sort of cloaked in an aura. But I like, being able to talk to people like you, and who can sort of shed light on some of these institutions that make up the fabric and the culture of Washington and politics. Because sometimes they're taken for granted, like, oh yeah, there's that thing. And then when somebody asks, like, but I don't actually know what it's all about. I know there might be something about a tie, white ties or something like that. So thanks for walking through this, because I think that it's fun and sort of gives us a sort of an inside look that not everybody gets.
Well, it is fun, but the next time we do it, I do think it should be white tie and tails.
Well, absolutely, and that might be the way that we kick off the video series, for political theater.
Your first and last one, yeah. Yes.
But thanks again, George, and we'll have a lot to talk about at a later date, because you're also doing a history of the White House Correspondents Association dinner, and we've got that coming up. So we'll have you back to talk about that at some point. So
sounds good.
Thanks much, George. And thank you for listening out there, for subscribing to Political Theater. If you like what you've heard, or even if you don't like what you've heard, please subscribe. Say nice things about us so that we can keep doing these kind of programs. Go to rollcall.com to subscribe to our newsletter, and we'll see you next time.